The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
It's nice to be back. I've been away this past month teaching a month-long retreat at Spirit Rock, and then before that, I was on my own retreat. I was here for a week in between, but it's nice to be back. I always come back both from my own retreats and teaching with some more inspiration somehow. So today I thought I would talk about aversion. Yeah, aversion. Aversion, resistance, pushing away experience is such a part of our lives as human beings. We have aversion, resistance to, reactivity to physical experience, what other people say or do. We have aversion to sound, sight, smells. Of course, not always. Sometimes we like what we see, we hear, we smell. But there's a good chunk of what happens in our life that is reactivity to our experience. Not only physical experience, but also what's happening in our minds. And so this aversion, at its base, when we don't like something, aversion is a response or reaction to something that's unpleasant. It's really quite simple. It's a simple process of mind that when something unpleasant happens, we don't like it, we don't want it, we want to get rid of it, or we want to get ourselves out of here. It's kind of like there's two basic movements of aversion. One, when we don't like something and we want to push it away, we want to get rid of it. Kind of in an outward way, the movement of anger, pushing away, is one form of aversion. Another form of aversion might be something more like, get me out of here, as opposed to, I'm going to stay and you're going to go. It's like, well, I'll get out of here. That's more the movement of fear. And so two really fundamental forces of aversion. Aversion can also be directed inwardly to ourselves. We can not like ourselves, not like our thoughts, not like the way we respond. And so there's an inner aversion that happens also. Usually that inner reactivity is to something we're thinking about or something we believe about ourselves. And so this fundamental force in our lives can be seen in some ways as rooted in a very natural biological response to the world. We think about where we've evolved from, the organisms that we've, you know, all of life, all of sentient beings, and including single-celled creatures, have a kind of a very innate response to things that are pleasant and things that are unpleasant. A single-celled creature will move away from a noxious environment and towards nourishment, not having a lot of choice about that, but just kind of as an automatic response. And so this movement away or this pushing away when something's unpleasant is a very natural force in our minds, and it's rooted in this wish to survive, the wish to be happy. And yet so often what happens is that, well, in the first place, that wish in our, or that movement to push away in our own biology is it's actually not automatic. There's the possibility of understanding something's unpleasant and just knowing it as unpleasant, and to not have an additional mental contraction around it. I would say in those single-celled creatures, it's all a physical response. And in our system, our response to the environment is mediated through our minds, through our ideas, our thoughts, as well as some very kind of basic functions in our minds. And so this reaction of aversion, of the not liking, the wanting to push away, the contraction around unpleasant, is actually optional. May not seem so. But the Buddha, in his description of this quality of aversion to unpleasant experience, at one point he was talking to his followers, and he said to his followers, "So, an ordinary person, someone who is not trained in the way of the Dharma, experiences pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And someone who's awakened, someone who is free from suffering, also experiences pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral." And so in this teaching, he's pointing out the difference between unpleasant experience and suffering. He's also pointing out the difference between pleasant experience and happiness. Our minds tend to think that they're equated. We tend to think of unpleasant as suffering, as pleasant as, and pleasant as happiness. And so he said, both ordinary people and people who are free experience pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. So what's the difference between them? And he said, when somebody, an ordinary person, experiences unpleasant sensation, they think, "Why me? Woe is me. I'm miserable. I'm suffering. This is horrible. How can I fix this? How can I change this?" I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember exactly what he said in there, but something along those lines. Woe is me. And he said, when someone who's free from suffering experiences an unpleasant experience, they experience an unpleasant experience. Stops there. And so he pointed to this reactivity of aversion, of all of those thoughts around it, of how can I fix this? How can I change this? How can I get rid of this? I'm in such a miserable state. I have to get out of here. You have to get out of here. All of those thoughts that are related to aversion are optional. Now, this doesn't mean that the unpleasant will go away. And it also doesn't mean, and this I'm going to hopefully keep reinforcing over and over again in this talk, it also doesn't mean that we don't do anything. Aversion is a mechanism by which we have habitually responded and taken action when there's something unpleasant happening in our lives. Aversion often is the motivator for us, why we do things, why we take action, why we might take action when we see something unjust happening. Might come out of aversion. And why we might take action, for instance, if we are in physical pain in meditation, it could come out of aversion. It's like, "Oh, I'm so mad at this knee. Why does it have to hurt?" And the movement comes out of wanting to get rid of the pain, wanting to push it away. And so the motivating power of aversion is a lot of how we've navigated the unpleasant experience in our lives. And so when we hear something like, when someone who's free experiences an unpleasant experience, they experience an unpleasant experience, we think it means that they just sit there or they don't do anything. But it means that they don't have that contraction, that reactivity. But it may well mean that discernment is present about what an appropriate action might be. When aversion has this kind of pushing away quality to it, as I said, actually what I'd say is the nature of aversion in our minds is to separate us. The nature of aversion is to separate. That may be, I want to get rid of you, I want to get rid of me, I want to annihilate. Lots of different flavors of that separation. So that when that separation happens, that's kind of the nature of aversion, but it comes along with the belief, a delusion, that in order to be happy, I need to get rid of this thing. And the belief embedded in delusion, the belief embedded in aversion, the delusion of aversion, thinks that the only way towards happiness when there's an unpleasant experience is to act on that aversion. Aversion is not going to tell you there's another way. And yet there is another way. And that other way is wisdom and compassion. Wisdom can act, compassion can act when there's an unpleasant experience. When there's something unjust happening in the world, wisdom and compassion can motivate us to act to alleviate that. When we are experiencing physical pain in the body, when we're not compounding it with reactivity of woe is me, this is horrible. I mean, the teaching that the Buddha gave there, that teaching when he said, what's the difference between these two? He gave an analogy for that for the ordinary person. He says it's as if somebody, having been struck by a dart, picks up a second dart and stabs themselves. And so compounding the pain with the reactivity. And so there's the unpleasant experience, and then there's all the mental machinations around it. And the Buddha says that's extra unpleasant added on top of that unpleasant. And so when we are, for instance, noticing a painful physical experience, noticing the aching and pulsing and stabbing and burning of our knee, for instance. If we're reacting to that with aversion, then that, actually what often happens with that, because there's the compounding, it is as if we've stabbed ourselves with the second arrow, maybe a third, maybe a fourth, maybe a 104th arrow, because we can react to reactivity. We cannot like something, and then we can get mad at ourselves for not liking it, or we can get angry at ourselves for being mad, and then we can get afraid of ourselves for being angry, compiling reactivity on top of reactivity. And so that process, all those reactions in the mind, obscure the possibility of wisdom and compassion, understanding what an appropriate response is. And so as we start to play with becoming aware of aversion, we may begin to see the difference between the unpleasant thing and the aversion. And at times even see the aversion fall away and see that there is the possibility of wise action. So much of our wanting to act when something unpleasant is happening and we are averse to it is actually not so much. Many times, if you look at this in your own experience, there's definitely exceptions to this, but many times when we are experiencing something unpleasant and we're averse to it, the reason we want to do something to get rid of the unpleasant is more to get rid of the aversion than it is to get rid of the unpleasant. Because aversion is really, really unpleasant. And so we're moving to get rid of the unpleasantness of the aversion as opposed to the unpleasantness of the original experience. And so this is kind of the direction that we begin to explore in our mindfulness practice. And aversion also can serve as a kind of a signal that something needs to be taken care of. unpleasant experience may be the root of that signal. Pain in the body is often a signal that the body needs to be taken care of. You know, we cut ourselves with a knife, there's pain in the body, and it's useful to, you know, you wouldn't want to necessarily run around and say, oh no, what am I going to do? But, oh, cut myself with a knife, it's time to clean the wound, it's time to cover the wound. That's wisdom. That's compassion. The extra reactivity of the oh no, and some of that, you know, can happen. It's like, oh, I cut myself with a knife. I don't have time for this. I have to go teach a class right now. You know, well, look again. You have to have time for this. So, you know, the extra reactivity is in the way often of taking care of ourselves skillfully. And yet the aversion, because it's such a habitual response to unpleasantness, it can serve as kind of a wake-up call for us, like, oh, okay, there's something that needs to be taken care of here. And so, you know, again, I'm not saying that just because you're experiencing something unpleasant that you should not do anything. And yet looking at the way the aversion is extra, we are compounding our suffering with the aversion. So one of the first things with aversion is really helpful to recognize it's happening. Just notice, begin to recognize. So with mindfulness, one of the things I want to really encourage here is, you know, as I explore, as we give a kind of exploration of aversion, and I say it's extra, sometimes then we can get aversion to aversion. It's like, well, it's extra. How can I get rid of this aversion? And there is some wisdom to the understanding that aversion is extra. But having aversion to the aversion is also extra. And so what the practice is to explore is, what does it mean to become mindful of aversion? What does it mean to explore the aversion? In the present moment, what does it mean to explore the aversion? And so that's the kind of direction I'd like to take you today, because as opposed to thinking about how do we get rid of aversion, we can't get rid of aversion. It has been well practiced. It's well ingrained in our minds. There's a lot of kind of habitual patterns towards aversion in our minds. And the way that functions often is that, you know, aversion thinks it's doing something for us. As I said a few minutes ago, you know, it's got that delusion that it thinks it's you know, this is the only way to happiness. And so aversion thinks it's taking care of us. Aversion thinks that the only way towards happiness is to get rid of that thing, get me out of here. And so that belief in aversion, when we're not present in the present moment, what we're doing is kind of projecting into the future. Our aversion is creating the scenario that it will be good when that thing is gone. And that's where our minds are and have been. In acting out of aversion, we have been in the pleasant fantasy of it'll be good when that thing is gone. And so basically, we miss how painful it is to have that aversion in the first place. So aversion has fooled us into thinking it's a good thing. But as soon as we start turning towards aversion itself, we begin to feel the pain of the aversion. We feel the unpleasantness of the aversion. And that mindfulness then begins to point out to our minds that this pathway that we've been taking for all of these years might not actually be the best pathway. Maybe there's another pathway. And it's this learning that happens. The Buddha pointed to understanding suffering as a kind of foundation for the entirety of our practice. Understanding suffering. Aversion is suffering. Understand dukkha, the word, the Pali word for that's usually translated as suffering. Understand dukkha, that's what he said, is the kind of foundation of our path. He didn't say get rid of dukkha. He said understand it. Understand it with mindfulness. As we understand it with mindfulness, wisdom grows, and the wisdom begins to transform that suffering. It releases the aversion. We can't figure out how to do that, actually. Sometimes we can recognize it's not helpful and reorient, step to some other experience, step aside. But the actual kind of reworking of the reactivity, the pattern of reactivity, wisdom does that. We can't take care of that. We cannot figure that out. And so there's a kind of a trust, in a way, that we have to develop with the mindfulness practice, that meeting something as challenging as aversion is actually useful, that it's valuable. And as we explore this, as we actually turn towards aversion with mindfulness, we start to get the sense of that. We can get the sense of that immediately. Initially, it's very painful to turn towards aversion, because we're feeling the unpleasantness of the aversion as well as the unpleasantness of whatever it is. And yet, as we recognize, oh, there's this pain that's happening, this unpleasant experience, a bodily pain, for example, and the aversion, and we start to see they're different, the wise mindfulness, the kind of curiosity about, oh, what's happening here? It's like creates a little bit of space. And so initially we are feeling the unpleasantness of both the unpleasant thing and the unpleasantness of the aversion. But then the mindfulness creates a bigger container in which that entire thing is experienced. And there's a sense of a kind of an ease or a kind of a little bit of release that can happen, even as we are observing and meeting the aversion. And so pretty quickly, as we bring mindfulness to something like aversion, we begin to get an understanding, an inner understanding of why it's helpful. And so initially we have to trust that it's useful. It doesn't sound useful. I remember my very first practice with mindfulness, and I've told this story a lot, but it popped in. It seems relevant in this moment. I'll keep it short. Was working with anger, a lot of anger over a breakup of a relationship. And I got this book. A friend sent me a book, said, wow, I've been finding this mindfulness really helpful. Here's a book. Why don't you read it? And I read the book, and I got out of the book was something like, see if you can notice your reactivity. So notice your anger instead of reacting to it or acting on it. And that did not make any sense to me at all. It's like, how is that going to help? I don't get it. But my friend had said this was helpful. The book said it's helpful. And it's like, well, everything else I've tried hasn't worked. I'll give it a try. And so that was a little bit of trust, a little bit of willingness at least even to run the experiment. Run the experiment. What happens if I observe anger instead of spinning out in the anger, acting on it, fantasizing about what I was going to do to this person? What would happen if I just noticed the anger itself? And this is the fundamental shift with aversion. In terms of mindfulness, whatever, there's something that we're averse to, some unpleasant experience, maybe a thought in the mind. We can be averse to unpleasantness of body or unpleasantness of mind. In this case, I didn't quite make this distinction, but I can see in retrospect that the aversion arose because I started thinking about this person, and so it was something that happened in my mind. It was a thought that I was averse to. And then I got angry based on that. And so the exploration, rather than thinking about the person that I was angry with, it's like, rather than paying attention to the thing that we think is the problem, turn towards the aversion itself. And that's what I began to do. I began to explore, okay, angry, yep, anger, yep, I know that I'm angry. That's where I started. And at first I had no idea what to do with that, but what I discovered over the course of several weeks of doing this was that it began to give me that space. And in fact, not only did it give me space around the anger, like the first time I noticed that anger, I was sitting there frozen at the computer, unable to function. I had gotten so lost in my thoughts that I was just, I was enraged. I was frozen at the computer at work. And the recognition of, oh, I'm angry. What am I supposed to do with this? That's what happened in my mind. And in that moment, it's like, well, I don't know what I do with this, but I guess I go back to work. That very first recognition was a little bit of space around the anger that let me let it go enough to get on with my day. And over the next few weeks, I began noticing that the mindfulness began recognizing the anger earlier in the process. I didn't get to the point of enraged. So it is, I began to understand the value for myself. Initially, it was like, I have no idea why this is valuable. Within a couple of weeks, I had signed up. Yep, this is helpful. I'm going to do this. This is amazing, actually, what this is doing for my life. So recognizing that aversion is happening is really helpful, so we can begin to turn towards it. There's a lot of different flavors of aversion. I'm going to read some names, some states of mind. Because initially I was given the kind of the assignment at one point. Notice your different flavors of aversion. You know, what are the flavors that you experience? And so I came up with a list immediately. Here are the ones that I came up with for myself. Fear, anger, bitterness, resentment, hostility, dislike, rage, irritation, annoyance, worry, hatred, distrust, cruelty, discontent, frustration, aversion, dissatisfaction, loneliness. Those were the ones I was living my life in. A lot of those going around. Then I decided to look in the thesaurus. Here's some more. Loathing, disapproval, disgust, fury, disrespect, disparagement, contempt, humiliation, unkindness, meanness, spitefulness, disdain, disquiet, anxiety, apprehension, dread, distress, unease. Even impatience, boredom can be rooted in aversion. Can be. They also can be rooted in greed, but you can check for yourself which kind, what flavor it is. So there's a lot of different flavors of aversion, from the subtlest unease to rage and terror. So useful to begin to recognize it. And using this naming, this is one of the first tools that we can explore, just recognizing, oh, right, irritation is happening. And just to recognize that it is happening in the present moment. This turning towards, so taking our attention out of the thing that we're averse to and turning towards the aversion itself is the fundamental tool. And using that recognition is kind of, it's really powerful, actually. That first practice that I talked about, which was in my daily life, you know, I was just noticing anger as it happened in my daily life. I wasn't even meditating at that point. I wasn't even interested in meditating, but I was interested in navigating my life with a little more ease around the anger. And so I just began noticing it in my daily life. Taking the attention out of the person I was angry with and turning towards that and recognizing it, just the recognition. This is anger. This is anger happening in the present moment. Often what we see when we're caught in our thoughts is those thoughts, like in this case, the thoughts about this person were often in the past. I was livid about what this person had done in the past. And the mind would create that story, and it would be like I was living in the past again. And so I was kind of unaware that it was happening now. And so that's one of the things to notice. Okay, anger's happening now. Frustration's happening now. Irritation's happening now. Just this simple process of recognition. Even if you don't do anything more than that, really, really powerful. This was the tool that I used. The only thing I understood from that book that I read the first time through, I think I probably read it 3 or 4 times over the course of the first 6 months of my practice. But at first, that was all I gleaned. You know, just notice it. Recognize that it's happening in the present moment. And that itself, over the course of 3 or 4 weeks, was immensely powerful. I had no idea what it meant to use some of the other tools of mindfulness, which I'm going to share with you. But just that, recognizing it's happening, was really powerful. Transformed my relationship to the anger. Reduced the anger immensely. So other tools, though, turning to the body. What is the experience in the body while aversion is happening? If we're experiencing some kind of physical pain or distress, there's the pain of that, physical pain, like a knee pain, or if we cut ourselves with a knife, there's the pain of that, the kind of specific area of pain there. The aversion is a mental state. It's something happening in our minds, but it often has an impact on the body. And all of these flavors will have different impacts. Irritation may just feel like this jittery energy in the body. Fear may feel like a kind of agitation in the abdomen and the stomach. Anger might feel like pressure and heat rising in the chest. So there's a lot of different sensations that happen with these mind states. The basic of aversion, in my experience, just the kind of foundation of all of these states, is this wanting to separate. And the basis, the kind of physical sense of that, to me, is a kind of a bracing in the body. Kind of like the whole body kind of tenses a little bit. And then there are these other sensations that happen with the stronger emotions that we get. But we can feel that bracing. We can feel that kind of... Ugh. When we have the physical reactivity to the unpleasant mental or unpleasant like pain in the body, that physical reactivity compounds. It's like it compounds the pain. It's like that second dart we get. It's like what we see is like, at one point I had a frozen shoulder. I don't think it was actually torn, but it wasn't moving very hard, and it was much, and it was very, very hard to move it, and it was very painful when I did. And so there was the kind of pain in the shoulder, especially the searing pain when I moved to open or close a door or something. It's like, whoa, it was really searing in this area. And there was also a kind of a general bodily sense of activation and bracing. And I had this idea in my mind that, okay, well, there's this thing in my shoulder, and it's like, you know, it's irritated. There's inflammation in the body, and I had created this whole idea, you know, it's like, that inflammation is like traveling through the whole body, through the blood, and it's like, well, that's why I have this kind of generalized feeling of irritation in the whole body. That's what I told myself. And so I wasn't resisting it. I was just like, okay, well, there's this kind of feeling of generalized tension throughout the whole body while I was having this frozen shoulder. And I was just noticing it, exploring it, being with it. And one day, in my meditation, there was something in my mind, just some little bit of holding around this pain in the shoulder that just let go for a split second. And I could tell it was a release in the mind, but the impact on the body was amazing. It was like that whole general feeling of irritation vanished for a split second. And then I felt the mind go, kind of like the no, I don't like this frozen shoulder. And that feeling of generalized irritation through the body immediately came back. And that was a kind of a real amazing recognition to me that that generalized feeling of bracing was a reaction to the mind. It was a reaction to that clinging, that mental tension. And so we can start to be curious about how does aversion impact the body? Turning towards it, bringing attention to the physical sensations that's happening in the body. This can be very supportive for us, in particular if there's a lot of stories going on in the mind. If whatever we're averse to, like in my case, averse to thoughts about that relationship, turning to the body helps take our attention out of those thoughts. Really helpful, because those thoughts are like we have our foot on the gas pedal of that aversion as we're thinking those thoughts. And so when we can take our attention out of those thoughts and just pay attention to the physicality of aversion, it's like we've taken our foot off the gas pedal. I sometimes use the analogy with mindfulness that it's kind of like putting a car into neutral. You know, so while we're going quickly down the freeway, we've got our foot on the gas pedal, you know, we're going 60 miles an hour down the freeway, that momentum, and we're adding to the momentum, we're keeping it going by putting our foot on the gas pedal. That's our thoughts with the aversion. The thoughts is like our foot on the gas pedal. If we take our attention out of the thoughts and pay attention to the physicality of the aversion, we take our foot off the gas pedal, it doesn't mean that we've slammed on the brakes. It doesn't mean it stops. It's more like we've put the car into neutral. We put a car that's going 60 miles an hour down the freeway into neutral. It doesn't stop immediately. There's a momentum to that, but it will come to a stop if we don't re-engage the gears and put our foot on the gas pedal again. And so likewise with the mindfulness of aversion or any challenging emotion, it's like we've taken our foot off the gas pedal when we take our attention out of the thoughts, take our attention away from the thing that we are averse to. And we get to feel the momentum of that mind state. It will come to a stop if we hold it with that allowing, kind attention, not resisting it, not fighting it. Like what we're doing here is trying to steer the car while it comes to a stop. Just exploring, what does that mean to be with this? Another useful tool for working with aversion is beginning to notice or check out. This is a little bit more of a kind of active investigation. The basic investigation is being with what is the aversion like here and now? What is that? A little more active investigation is to begin to explore what is actually unpleasant that the mind is reacting to. Because there's something happening now that's unpleasant. Carol Wilson, at one point in one talk that I heard, she gave on aversion, she said, when aversion is happening, there's something unpleasant happening in the present moment that you're not really noticing. And so there's something, there's something unpleasant going on that aversion is a response to. So what is it? Sometimes that can be a surprise when we start to actually investigate and look at that. What is it? What is the actual unpleasant thing? So not long after I heard Carol give this Dharma talk, I was doing walking meditation on a retreat, and we were in a kind of a crowded hallway, and somebody slipped in next to me, and so we all kind of had to adjust the spacing between people. And as soon as that person slipped in next to me, aversion. And, you know, I wouldn't have normally, you know, thought about this too much. It's like, well, of course I was averse. You know, why would somebody do something like that? But anyway, I had just heard this. It's like, okay, what is unpleasant here? What's unpleasant? What's going on? And so I began investigating what was going on. And I checked all the senses. Seeing person didn't look unpleasant. Okay, check. Not seeing. Hearing, they weren't making any noise. Check, not the hearing. I couldn't smell them or taste them. They weren't touching me. Wasn't coming in any of the five physical sense doors that the unpleasantness was happening. And at that point, I thought, well, there must be something going on in the mind. And I still didn't quite get it, but I, you know, it's like, okay, well, there must be a thought in there. And I didn't see any thoughts in particular. I just felt this aversion to this person. But as I did the walking, I began, you know, it's like, okay, well, what's going on in the mind? And at some point, I saw the thought, that person is weird. And I recognized that the aversion was to the thought. It was something, there was aversion happening based on something that was going on in my own mind, a belief going on in my own mind. That was kind of an amazing recognition that there were some beliefs around what you do, protocol for doing walking meditation in a crowded hall, and so, you know, there were beliefs around that, and the whole thing was sprung up around that. As soon as I saw that it was a reaction to a thought, it's like in the next walking pass, the aversion had vanished, and metta was there for that person. So This I found to be a very powerful practice, to check it out. What is actually unpleasant? When any of these variety of states, impatience, irritation, anger, fear, confusion, whenever there's something that aversion is founding, what is actually going on? I would say that at least 90% of the time, if not 99% of the time, we are reacting to something going on in our own minds and not something actually out there. Even reacting to the cut, if we cut ourselves with a knife, the reaction is often more to what it means than the actual physical experience of the pain of the cut. What does this mean? So, really interesting and useful to explore that. What is actually being reacted to? Another question that can be explored there that I find useful is, what's being believed right now? Here's this reactivity. What's being believed? Because most of the time, our reactivity is coming out of something we believe. I want to take a few minutes. Hopefully we'll have some time for comments and questions. But I want to take a few minutes to look at aversion in relationship. Mostly we've been exploring what does it mean to look at aversion as it's happening here in my own being. I'm mentioning a little bit about the aversion that arose for me around relationship. often we do have aversion to what other people do, say, or even what we think that they think. Really helpful to recognize that we don't know what people are thinking. That's a good reflection or reminder. But often I think that kind of, we get averse when we think people think something, often about us. You know, we don't like what people think about us, what we think they think about us, what we assume they think about us based on how they're behaving. And so, again, really useful to recognize that the aversion is to our belief rather than their actual thoughts, because we don't know what their thoughts are. So recognizing, again, the belief, the really useful tool in exploring relationship, aversion in relationship, what's being believed. And then in terms of being averse to what people do and say, I want to explore two pieces of this or two sides of this. One, that, again, based on belief, you know, what when somebody is doing or saying something that we're averse to, is it because they are not acting in line with what we believe should be happening? And so this kind of discomfort, you know, just as a kind of an example of a simple way this can work, culture shock. You know, when we go to another culture and people behave differently, it's like people aren't doing what we think they should be doing. They're standing too close. They're standing too far. They're making not enough eye contact. They're making too much eye contact. They're touching us or they're not touching us. There's so many different ways that cultures engage, and we can get uncomfortable because of very deeply ingrained beliefs around what does it mean for two people to meet each other. And so exploring those beliefs. Is it simply a belief based on culture, based on conditioning, based on upbringing, based on views? Is that belief something that there might be another perspective about? So looking at that, when we see that aversion, is it simply a different culture that we're meeting? Maybe, you know, a subculture even in our culture, you know, different way of seeing things. And then there is the aversion that we experience when we see someone doing or saying something that causes harm. When we see someone doing or saying something that is creating suffering in the world. This is a piece that, you know, the Buddha did explore coming back to. There's some foundational things in humanity for being a wise and skillful participant in the human race. And that includes refraining from killing, refraining from stealing, refraining from harming through our sexuality, refraining from harming through our speech. And so when we see someone behaving in a way that is counter to harmlessness, is counter to ethical conduct, we can get reactive. Now, here's where we have to explore what the difference is between discernment, compassion, and wisdom, and aversion. Because seeing somebody do something unskillful and wanting to stop them from doing that, wanting to protect ourselves from harm, wanting to protect others from harm, that is skillful. That's based in compassion and love. And yet so often it gets tied up with hatred. It gets tied up with fear and confusion and anger. And so that's what we can begin to look at and explore. When we see that, when somebody's behaving in an unethical way, it doesn't mean that we sit there necessarily and just say, oh, you know, unpleasant is happening. We may take action. In fact, we may take action out of aversion because we can't, you know, we're not going to be able to purify our minds to the point of no aversion probably in the split second when we're seeing something happening. But we may be able to remind ourselves of the suffering that's motivating that action. And we may be able to remind ourselves that action can happen out of compassion instead of aversion. And exploring that side of things. And again, in our own, even in our own experience, you know, taking action around unpleasant experience, you know, cutting yourself with a knife, knowing when to adjust your posture in sitting. It's not about just gritting your teeth and bearing unpleasant, but it is about exploring the possibility of not having that gripping, that hatred, that aversion, and opening to action that comes from a completely different source. Discernment from wisdom and compassion. So we have a couple of minutes. Any thoughts or comments or, yeah, in the back. Would you pass the mic back? Oh, Richard got it.
A couple of comments. One is, I'll just add another to your list, which I didn't hear it, but you may have had it, is jealousy.
Jealousy, I didn't have that one in there. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a powerful one.
Envy and jealousy both, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Another point.
They can also be motivated out of greed as well.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's quite common.
Yes, yeah.
In our culture here, you know. People have the bigger house, and I'm jealous of that.
Yes.
They got all these things. So that's a powerful emotion. The other thing, too, is that as you're investigating your aversion to something, what I have found is often the universe will support you in that investigation.
Say and more. That, what do you mean?
So you're dealing with anger. And suddenly you see a magazine story on anger that kind of comes across it. Or a friend talks about somebody, oh, you should talk to, I saw this great talk. And you listen to it. And in that, the guy or the person talks about anger. So what I'm saying is sometimes the universe, you know, will support you in what you are trying to deal with.
Yes.
And the final thing I would like to share is that sometimes you'll get to a point where you are welcoming aversion because you see it as a end to suffering because the aversion is bringing up something within yourself that you need to deal with.
Absolutely.
And therefore you get to that point of welcoming it. So that's kind of
And that's a beautiful reflection because we do start to see that beginning to pay attention to aversion is it's like aversion is pointing out and, you know, any of these reactive emotions is pointing out where we're stuck. Pointing out what we are butting up against in the world where we are reacting. So it's pointing out something in our own minds when we're averse. And so the mindfulness, as I said, we begin to see the value of it and that we do begin to recognize, oh yeah, thank you for showing me. I'm still stuck here. Yes. And we need to stop. So thank you for your attention.